Hello and welcome to the Lost Dot Podcast and the very first edition of the Accursed Race, TAR number one, brought to you by our race partners, Albion, Tailfin, Komoot, Peak Design, Quirk Cycles, and POC. More than 40 intrepid riders are about to arrive at the start line in the Albanian city of Shkodër, ready to take on this new challenge, a no-fly, fixed route, off-road race across mysterious mountains in the beautiful Balkans. Their adventure will see them cycle 1,600 kilometers and climb 37,000 meters through Albania, Montenegro, Bosnia and Herzegovina, and Kosovo in a bid to become the inaugural winner of the Accursed. I'm Ian Broom, and over the next 2 weeks, I'll be working with our team on the ground to bring you all the trials, tribulations, and triumphs from the trails. That includes daily updates and all the stories from the race as told by the riders themselves. In this pre-race episode, we get into the story behind the Accursed, look ahead at the fixed route our riders will take, and explore the ways we plan to share the race with you back home, wherever you are. Let's get started with the first of two conversations. Taylor Doyle is Lost Dot's media manager. She spoke to Andrew Phillips, race director, and Hannah Larbalestier, race coordinator, to learn more about the origins of the race, the route, and much more. But before that, some introductions.
Where we should start, I think, is with your roles and who you both are, and basically how you found yourselves here heading the Accursed Race for Lost Dot.
Yeah, I'm Andrew Phillips. I'm the race director for the Accursed. Basically, the Accursed is run by Lost Dot, which is the small company that runs Transcontinental, the Accursed, and the Trans-Pyrenees. I joined straight after finishing TCR number 8, and I've spent a lot of that time over the last 2 years putting together the route for the Accursed and really sort of getting stuck in the Balkans and finding the best bits of double track, the funnest valleys, the best views, and the coolest descents.
Amazing. And Hannah, what about you? Oh, I've just introduced you for yourself. This is Hannah. What's your role, and how did you find yourself here working for Lost Dot and heading an ultra race in the Balkans?
So I'm race coordinator for the Accursed Race. I joined Lost Dot last year, so early last spring. And, you know, within the first couple of months of working for Lost Dot, I found myself on a recce in the Balkans, finding some of the best routes for this race. So I went on 2 recces for the Accursed last year and helped develop a lot of the route, like some of it behind the scenes and most of it out in the field. There were some really glorious days, and then some days where we'd find ourselves, oh, like some days you find yourself on this amazing mountaintop, and then sometimes you're, you know, treading through a landfill or something, thinking that you need to find a new way around the route. But yeah, a lot of my last year working for Lost Dot has been helping to develop the route for this race, and I'm really excited for everyone to see it now. So like the riders and all of the dot watchers at home will be following along with our media coverage.
And then in the history of Lost Dot, how would you guys describe the Accursed Race as sort of like being seeded in that? Like, was it in motion, sort of this idea that there would be an off-road race in the Balkans? Was that already sort of simmering before you arrived? Or when did you realize you were going to be curating this race?
When I volunteered on TCR number 7 back in 2019, I met Anna Haslock, our managing director, for the first time at the control point in Serbia. We got chatting and obviously had a lot to talk about, both being passionate about riding bikes in the Balkans, and she was already had her eye on wrecking a route for a race in the Balkans, and she asked me about whether I'd be interested in coming along in the event nothing happened for a couple of years because of COVID. But then when I joined Lost Dot, It's a lot of work running the bike races. We already have a Transcontinental and Trans-Pyrenees, and then with adding Hannah to the team and you, of course, Taylor, we've finally had just about enough manpower to recce the route to the extent that we want to, need to. I think it would be fairly easy to just sort of slap a route together and run a race, but that's not the way we do it at Lost Art. We want to make sure that we have the best possible route we can. And we've really meticulously researched and recce'd every single kilometer of it. So yeah, it's been in the pipes for quite a long time. I think Anna talks about first thinking about it in 2017-18.
Let's talk more about how the Accursed Race fits with Lost Dot sustainability initiatives. Hannah, can you tell us about making the race a no-fly race and how we came to commit to this, how Lost Dot came to commit to this, and like what the reactions have been really?
I think it was on TCR last year that we made the decision that if we were putting on this race, that it had to be no-fly. We'd already been talking about how so much of the narrative around the race was going to be focused on these amazing environments that you're traveling through. And you go through so many amazing locations on the race that it just seemed like it would be just so contradictory to that narrative if we enabled riders to fly there. So we knew at that point that a huge environmental impact of putting on our races was travelers taking flight-based travel to get there. And we'd been putting in this huge effort for Transcontinental, especially to encourage riders to take more sustainable overland travel options to get there. And just before TCR last year, we launched the Green Leaderboard, which was a leaderboard just composed of riders traveling to get to and from the race overland. And I think we had almost 80 of the people on our start line had signed up for the Green Leaderboard, which made up like more than a quarter of the race. And so it just really demonstrated to us that there was this appetite for change and there was this appetite for sustainable travel and racing. And there was this big gap on the calendar for a race like that, that really like spoke to these people who were enthusiastic about it. That's not to say we're the first that have done it. GB Giro have been no-fly for years. But this was different in that it's a race that really takes riders to quite exotic and different locations. And we wanted to show that it's possible to do it and to get there. And not just possible, but that it's an interesting way of traveling to the race and that it makes it part of the journey. And also to show that it's not as much of like it's not as challenging as people think to get there. Like you can get to Albania from the UK in 36 hours. It doesn't have to be the arduous travel option that people expect it to be.
How have you been making the sort of endeavor of no-fly more accessible, and how have you been making it feel more possible for riders?
Yeah, I think it's really important to not just mandate the no-fly, but really enable everyone to not fly. We really don't want to be exclusionary with it as a no-fly event. And part of keeping our races inclusive, which is really important to us all at Lost Art, is to help people with that overland travel. So the biggest thing we've done is put on a coach service from Zagreb to Škoda, where the start line is in Albania. So we're hiring a coach. We're selling tickets to the riders at cost. It's really important to us that we can make this work and that we can show the community that it does work. We've also been setting out in quite a lot of detail different travel itineraries. There are a few different routes you could take down to the start line. So like really setting out train connections, coach connections, ferry routes, all that kind of thing. I haven't flown for a good few years now. I mean, it's something I really love doing. And you just totally get used to the pace of travel overland. When you take planes out of the equation, you don't even think about the inconvenience of taking 2 or 3 days across Europe. So yeah, we've been supporting with all those kind of things. advice to riders on how they might ask their employers for more time to travel, that kind of thing, and also providing low carbon travel grants to riders. So this is an initiative we started last year with Transcontinental, and we're rolling out, increasing the number of low carbon travel grants that we have across our races. And basically, we know it's expensive to travel overland, so we're helping subsidize riders who can't, who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford it.
As you said, that change of pace, you don't just hop on a plane and get off in a place that you've never been before, and there you are with your bike and you're starting. It's like, no, you had to make that journey to get there. And by the time you've got there, it's almost like, yeah, you feel like your whole, I'm getting spiritual now, your whole being is there, because it wasn't just this flash through the sky, which is almost like, yeah, kind of supernatural. Anyways.
We actually spoke to a rider recently who said he'd learned this expression, I think from a Buddhist teacher, who'd said to him that if you travel too fast, you leave your soul behind.
Amazing.
And although that's like, you know, it's very spiritual, it's also like kind of true, without going over the top about it. But like that feeling of traveling slowly, you really, you acclimatize to your surroundings along the way. You decompress on your way to the race. And by the time you get there, you feel like you really deserve to be there.
Andrew, I know that a couple months ago, we hopped on a video call together and I asked you if you could walk me through the route of the Accursed Race. And I think about 2 or 3 hours later, we realized that you were late for a meeting and we actually weren't even quite finished. So I know that you know this route like the back of your hand, but do you think that you are capable of giving a very brief overview of the route for listeners right now, if it was like a pamphlet version of the route?
Yeah, but basically it starts off in Skoda on the shores of Lake Skadar, which is this really important wetland on the border of Montenegro and Albania. Climbs almost straight away into the Accursed Mountains up towards the Theth Valley, which is just this most amazing dolomitic type valley with these huge sort of cube peaks and massive rock faces. It really is stunning on a sort of, you know, anywhere in the world scale. So into Montenegro, and then you're into the karst-like landscapes of Montenegro. Some really, really amazing non-stop climbing and descending. Karst is like limestone with lots of sinkholes. So you can get some really, really steep climbs and then descending straight back down into the next valley. Then into Bosnia near Trebinje and onto the Chiro rail trail, which is an old Austro-Hungarian railway line, which has these sort of amazing tunnels filled with bats, and it's all off-road, well, largely off-road for the first section anyway. Yeah, amazing tunnels, bridges, then up towards Mostar and towards the Sutjeska National Park, which is really amazing remote national park, beach forests and mountains, where I saw a bear last year on the Trans-Balkan race. Absolutely amazing. And then towards Dermitor, which TCR scholars will know. So up through Plugine, skirting around the edge of Dermitor, because the race is in May and there's very often a lot of snow there at this time of year. Then across the Dermitor uplands towards a town called Mojkovac. From there, the Biogradska Gora, which is an amazing little national park that no one's ever heard of. And then on again towards the Shepherd's Roads on the Montenegro-Kosovo border. Then the Kosovo stretch is pretty much all tarmac, which will be a nice respite for riders, I think, by that point. And just going to Kosovo at all is, I think, a great opportunity for people. Kosovans are incredibly friendly and no one has ever been there. So really, really nice to stop by Kosovo en route. Then back into Albania, and Albania is just amazing. I absolutely love the country. It's non-stop delights en route. Again, sort of incredible views of that side of the Accursed Mountains, and then climbing up towards Kukës, and then the Lura Deja Mountain Park, which is just stunning collection of Kettle Hole Lakes, super remote, really, really feels like you're in the middle of nowhere. Then dropping down towards Peshkopi, where CP2 is. I haven't mentioned CP1, which was in Barana, just before the Shepherd's Roads in Montenegro. CP2 in Peshkopi, and then on into another really remote stretch, the Mali Magrupa Park, which has a lot of there's a lot of chromium mining around there, which doesn't sound very attractive, but you get these amazing glimpses of you have these incredible untouched valleys, and then you'll come out in the middle of seemingly nowhere, and there'll be another valley which has been torn open by historic mining, some of it still going on, and then back into the wilderness. So some really incredible roads and tracks and valleys there. And then on into the final bit between there and Shkodër again, which we've not talked a lot about, but it's a really cool bit of route, and we're kind of letting riders discover that for themselves.
Ooh, so that one's a bit of a secret.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
And what can Dot Watchers expect from this race in terms of media and race coverage? How will this year's race differ from other races in that respect? And what's the best way to follow along?
We're doing things a little bit differently for this race. So hopefully it will be a refreshing change for Dot Watchers. But we've talked about this, having this dual narrative of like both following the race and also letting the Dot Watchers really experience these landscapes that are so crucial to the race. We're actually going to be taking on a bit of a wildlife style approach to media coverage. One of the things we've talked a lot about is how important it is not to detract from that sense of remoteness for the riders, because there's nothing worse than if you're in the middle of a race and you feel like you're in this amazing location and you've traveled there by bike and it feels so far removed from everywhere, and then suddenly like a podcaster or a photographer will just pop up on your route. Like we don't want
nothing worse.
I mean, sometimes it's refreshing to be able to talk to someone on a race like that, but we want the riders to really experience the remoteness of these landscapes for themselves, and so we'll be trying not to step on their toes too much in those locations, and so we might be undercover trying to get some photography around there.
Joining our photographers out on the trails are our two race reporters for the Accursed, Ross Brannigan and Tom Probert. Both have previously reported on the Transcontinental, and Tom is an experienced ultra rider himself. Taylor sat down for a chat with them to learn more about their role and what it's like to cover an ultra distance race.
So, would you guys like to take a stab at describing the role of a race reporter in a sort of like short summary for people, so that people know kind of like what your job is out on the trail or the road?
Yeah, I could take a stab at this, Tom, if you want.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so the role of a race reporter is really to bring the race to life for the people at home, and to turn what would just be dots on a map for people watching on their computers into real life people. And giving them thoughts and feelings and emotions, and really trying to put the people at home into the race, if you like. So that's how I see the race reporter's role being. It's just I'm trying to really immerse the reader and the listener into the places and listening to the people who are taking on these incredible challenges, and also just to really bring out the best of all the people who are racing, because everybody who does these events they're fantastically unique and actually incredibly normal, which a lot of people might be like, how could you be possibly normal and race across continents and, you know, do 1,000-mile events? But genuinely, the people who do these events, they're incredible people with such stamina. But ultimately, I think we've all got something in us that can achieve these types of feats, which is great. So really on the race, it's speaking to riders. It's writing up for myself. It's writing up the daily race reports. So trying to turn what they tell me and trying to turn what I see on the road into words that are captivating. It's shuttling recordings off to Ian, who's at home editing the podcast together, and then trying to just be a core member of the race team, supporting the race directors and coordinators to find riders, keeping an eye on the tracker, you know, taking shifts at driving. And then obviously before the race, it's doing all the research and interviewing riders and getting to know them, building up a rapport. So it's a great opportunity to go out, see amazing places and talk to people about cycling and write about cycling. But yeah, it's quite a shift you have to pull.
Sounds like a pretty cool job, Ross. Amazing. Tom, how do you feel about your race reporting role? How would you describe it to people who ask whether they understand self-supported racing or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with all of the stuff that Ross said. And the way that I see it, that the most important things really are getting the stories from the riders, because I think these kind of bike races are really unique in compared to other bike races, where something like the Tour de France, it's relatively easy to cover absolutely everything that happens, you know, with helicopters and people on motorbikes, and every like centimeter of the action is covered in minute detail. But the nature of these kind of races, the beauty of them is that they're so big and sprawling, and everybody's kind of off doing their own thing and having their own like very, very private adventure on, you know, because it's generally speaking like a solo endeavor, and that's the point of it. So I think it's kind of a unique job for the reporters to try and pull those stories and find out all those kind of weird adventures and weird experiences that the riders have had out of the riders, because even, you know, the photographers, that's something that you can't even access with photography. It's trying to kind of get the riders to paint the picture of their own experiences and their own stories, using their own words, really. And then I think the other part of it as well, and this is especially the case with this race, is about the place itself and trying to immerse the listener in the kind of atmosphere of the actual area that we're going to be in. And, you know, this is the Balkans. It's the heartland of the transcontinental race, countries that the TCR goes through every year. And it's somewhere that Lost Dot kind of have a real affinity with, and we're really trying to bring all of the beauty and the excitement and like majesty of this place that frankly like a lot of people don't really know about to the listener as well.
Would one of you like to give us a glimpse into what life in the control car is like, since you've both experienced it before? You guys will be in separate cars, because I know it can be a really intense experience, but it's also like a really unique one that I don't think people quite understand what's going on with the media team when you're out there and sort of keeping up with the race. But yeah, would one of you like to take a stab at what life in the control car is like?
Yeah, luckily I haven't had to share a control car with Ross, because I've heard the stories of his antics with his smelly bare feet up against the air-conditioner vents. So you want to be in my control car, ideally. I think
mine has the better music.
Yeah, but then it also has you singing in it as well, so you know, being in a control car is it's as intense as you'd expect. It's a very cramped situation, because you've got a lot of people in there, and each person has got a lot of kit, especially, you know, like the photographer's got all their gear, everyone's got a bag full of stuff, and you kind of accumulate things along the way. It's pretty chaotic, because you're never quite sure what's happening in the race, where riders are going to kind of crop up, where they're going to turn. I suppose on this one it'll be slightly easier because it's a fixed route. But even so, you've then got the kind of remoteness of the region, and you're contending with things like lack of phone signal. So it might be quite difficult to actually find where the riders are on the GPS tracker. And even then, there might be like a big delay. And everybody's kind of trying to do their own jobs from like, you know, a tiny area of just like one seat. There'll be like a photographer trying to edit photos and upload photos on the go, when I was doing the podcasting, I was also editing it like in the back seat. So I'd be just sat there with my headphones on, trying to kind of concentrate on that. So there's a lot going on. It's actually, having done both, you know, like the media team and racing myself, it's actually more similar than you'd think. The kind of challenges that you have to face, and the kind of you know, the kind of impact that has on your mind as well. Just like, you know, the kind of constant adapting to things and stress, and then lack of sleep. You know, you end up in kind of a similar state to the riders, I'd say.
So we're also doing it a bit differently this year. In addition to it being a fixed route, which in theory should be easier to sort of like find riders and know where they are, in theory. The other thing that we are doing differently is keeping an even more increased level of distance than we already normally do with Lost Dot races, almost to just like match the remoteness of the Balkans and really like truly respect it. So Tom and Ross will only be talking to riders either on tarmacked roads or in quote unquote civilization or resupply points and CPs. So with all of that in mind and those sort of intentions in mind, I want to ask you guys, how do you get riders to open up while maintaining like an appropriate level of distance to respect the self-supported aspect of Lost Dot races? What's the balance there?
Honestly, it's going to be such a privilege for these riders going to visit these places. So it's going to be really important to keep that distance, I think. It's going to be very special for the riders. But in terms of how you approach getting questions to a rider that you will elicit good answers and also doesn't take away from their experience, there's a few rules, I guess. It's like, from an interviewing perspective, is not to complicate things. What I tend to focus on is just like very immediate things, like, how has your day been? It's quite a very open-ended question. And also it just gives a rider a chance to sort of fill it up with however they want to answer. I sometimes like to say, you know, look at the landscape around you right now. How does that make you feel? Or what have you been thinking when you've been coming up this valley? Obviously, just keeping these how and what sort of questions, like how do you feel? What's it making you think of? Is often like the easiest way to just elicit a really interesting response from somebody, because it will, like, unless they've got their head down, they're absolutely buried into like, you know, their bike computer. You know, I would expect that some of them have got some thoughts and feelings about the places that they're in, and I would certainly hope so in this race in particular. One thing not to ask them is what their plans are, because they have absolutely no idea. there's just everybody just like, I don't know, I'm going to probably just ride for X number of hours and get some food. At home, that's probably a question that people would be like, oh, you know, I really want to know what their plans are for the next 24 hours. But honestly, you'll never get it, because they're all just living in the moment and taking it, like, you know, each kilometer at a time, trying to figure out what their next plan's going to be. And if you ask them what their plan for the next 24 hours is going to be, you're going to get a very blank face. So I think that's how I, from an interviewing perspective, would ask these questions. And also just knowing by the look in someone's face when to back off. You just got to understand people's body language quite acutely and go, yeah, this person doesn't really want to talk right now. And it's not a reflection on you or us as a media team. It's just they're in a different place. And you just got to back off and let them be. And later on, they might be willing to talk a little bit more.
Yeah. Tom, what's your approach to race reporting and recording?
So, yeah, I think like Ross says, all it really takes is a kind of bit of understanding and empathy. And hopefully, like, I like to think that I have a bit of that from having been on the other end of the microphone myself as well. And I like to think I can kind of understand what a rider's been through and what they're likely to be kind of thinking, and maybe direct some questions that are a bit more specific to like just the funny little quirks of doing these events. Like, you know, you might have been like craving a particular food that's a weird thing, and that's what's been getting you through the last 8 hours of climbing. Or you might have been like listening to a particular song on repeat just to get you up the last climb. And I'm quite interested in finding those like quirky little details that you know separate each rider and give each rider their own kind of identity, and you know, trying to find out what little details kind of constitute each rider's approach.
To wrap things up, you guys have definitely answered this in many different ways, but do you think you could sum up sort of what you hope to be bringing people at home, like when you're tired and it's like it's a weekend and the control car is smelly, when you're trying to keep yourself going, like, yeah, what do you remind yourself that you're trying to achieve when you're out there, and bring people at home, bring the Dot Watchers stories?
I think the thing which I like to think that we will bring to people at home, because a lot of the story of this race is about basically, this event is being held within the context of a climate emergency. The reason that this is a no-fly race is because as riders, as event organizers, as citizens of planet Earth, we have a responsibility to take in looking after the precious places that we have available to us to explore. And the Balkans remains one of those really special, unique, and pristine places that I think people at home just will never have come into contact with before. And I would imagine that a lot of the riders have never managed to experience before. So for me, as somebody who, you know, as I've worked in the conservation sector for like about 7 or 8 years, and, you know, climate is an incredibly important subject for me, I really want to get an impression of what these places make people feel, and just get an understanding about what makes them really special, and talk to riders and see how their impressions have maybe been exceeded, or, you know, just make them just really understand what journey they go on from these places. I mean, it's all well and good trying to like hype up like, oh, such and such is in the lead and this race is happening, it's like, you know, full on, but that's, for me, that's not necessarily it. I want to really, you know, open up essentially like an entire book of what the Balkans is, and just like allow the readers to rifle through this book and just be awed by like the, you know, the descriptions that we give and the amazing experiences that the writers have. And for someone to go, wow, that place sounds amazing. And for them to want to potentially visit it, and hopefully that be done in a sustainable way, and hopefully that feeds into the wider context of, you know, the climate and biodiversity crises that we hope to at least mitigate.
For sure. And of course, as they say, only once you have a relationship with something, i.e. the environment, can you even want to start to think about protecting it and yeah, preserving it. Tom, do you have anything to add about what you hope to bring as a race reporter?
Yeah, I think there's another really important thing that we'll be bringing to the listeners at home, and that's kind of inspiration, really, and trying to get people involved in this kind of bikepacking adventure racing thing, because I honestly believe it's just such a great thing for people to do, but also it's, you know, it's kind of a big scary thing to a lot of people, and like we were saying before, the nature of these races is kind of a bit opaque and a bit obscure, so trying to kind of paint a picture of how beneficial this can be to people that are taking part. You know, I've seen how much of a big impact it's had on riders and racers in these races, and myself as well. And like Ross was saying before, the kind of normality of it, you know, it's not like superheroes doing this. It's not out of the reach of anyone. But you know, it can seem like that sometimes. So I think that's something that I'm really keen to do, is to kind of just show how accessible it is, how normal it is, and how important and beneficial it is as well.
Amazing. That's really beautiful. And I feel the exact same way. When I had my first self-supported race experience, all I wanted to do was share it. And yeah, I wanted as many people as possible to be able to have the same experiences. Because, yeah, life-changing is not being hyperbolic. It truly is such a transformative experience.
Hopefully this pre-race episode has given you a taste of what to expect from the accursed race. Very soon, our riders will set off from Shkodër and begin a brand new adventure in some of the most incredible remote Balkan landscapes. In our next episode, Registration Day, we'll get to hear directly from the riders to find out how they're feeling ahead of taking on the accursed. Join us then, and don't forget that as well as this podcast, you can read daily race journals from the trails and find regular race updates across all our social media channels. Thanks to our race partners, Albion, Tailfin, Komoot, Peak Design, Quirk Cycles, and POC.
The Accursed.